Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm joined this afternoon by Ashwini, who is here to give us an update on a letter that was recently sent out to the whole Sangha. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Jen.
Hey. So a while back we sent a letter that detailed some changes that are happening at the monastery. And in the last little while, we've heard from people in a number of different ways that there have been quite a few questions that people have had about what that really means and what that's going to look like, et cetera. So we thought it might be time to do an update.
Absolutely. Yes, because I think people were concerned that we were shutting down the monastery or there was a for sale sign on the property. And so first we want to tell folks that that's not the case. The monastery is not being closed or sold.
I can attest. Here we are. We're alive and well down here. Yep.
Yes, but we are shifting what it is, and what the way we've described it or talked about it, and it's also not a retreat center. So it was predominantly a retreat center, and it was the place where we held most of our retreats. And practice was offered as a retreat experience at the Zen Center. And I think one of the big shifts is that it's no longer going to be a retreat center. It's going to be focused as a practice center. And we can talk a little bit about what that means.
So that it's not really, I mean, it's exactly as it's always been, in that the monastery is a place where practice is happening. It's a physical place where people can come and practice. It's just the shift is more from being a retreat center focused on offering practice through retreats to being more of a practice center where people are coming to train.
Yeah, it's almost that the dual focus of the monastery is now being a single focus of the monastery, which is it's a place where people practice, not a place where people practice and we offer retreats.
Which really is it's a big job being a retreat center all in itself, aside from the practice that happens through that.
That's exactly right. Yep.
Yes.
And so I think the way Sherry, announced it to us, at least to the community that's been in the process of looking to life to implement what the shift means, is there's only one rule in our practice, right? We're here to use everything in our experience to see what causes ourselves to suffer and to drop that so that we can end suffering. And so this community is focused 24/7 on ending suffering, right? That's what we practice. And so there's an intense focus on that being the reason that the community exists. It's an interesting place because it's always been that, but the shift is that it is the sole focus. It is the focus of the training that is offered, and the relationship of how the training happens has shifted. And I think you wrote a wonderful letter that we'll share with people coming to the practice center that really says, we're not offering an experience to people. We're creating the privileged environment container in which people can have the experience of focusing on practice while we're here.
Right? Exactly.
When we were having this conversation, I think there was someone in the group who mentioned, right, in a Montessori school, we create the environment so learning can happen.
Right.
And what we're doing now at the monastery is to create the environment. And it's not created by, the guide or by the senior monks or anyone else. Everyone's there in the privileged environment, creating the environment for practice to happen. And that's a different shift. That is the shift. Would you say?
That is the shift, yeah. And it's really it's profound in the sense of, if you use that Montessori school analogy, it's a good one, because what it does is it has the people who are coming here to spend time, to train, to be at the monastery, they're deepening their practice in the sense of a big piece of their practice, we could even say the central piece of it, is that they are practice and they are creating practice as they're here in how they practice, in holding the privileged environment while they're here. So instead of being sort of a consumer, if you will, of an experience, they're in fact participating in creating the experience, if you will,
exactly.
And creating
and
the environment.
Is, that is the shift. That really is. Mm-hmm. It's synonymous with what we've been talking about recently in practice, which is to take responsibility for practice. Mm-hmm. And I'll go back to a radio show where we talked with someone about how, you know, reassurances reassure the small person, but we are now focused on the recording and listening practice, which assists the practitioner, which mentors the person who wants to practice. It's sort of growing the awareness, the responsible grown-up awareness that can be here, that can be present, that can be responsive to life arising in the moment, right? That's mm-hmm. what we are mentoring. And so mm-hmm. the shift in practice is happening in all of those places because we're not in that child relationship to practice. We are taking responsibility for our practice, and therefore we can actually step into the environment that we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, tell me if this feels like it fits, Ashwini. As you're talking, what I'm seeing is that practice continues to offer practice in all different varied ways, which is good for all of us, because if we use something like a training analogy, or really learning anything, learning to dance, learning to play an instrument, when you're first setting out, you know, you do sort of need a led experience. You mm-hmm. do need someone to show you the basics and to walk you through the hows and that sort of thing. And so there are still all of those opportunities in practice. It's just that those particular things are not the focus of what's happening physically at the monastery.
Exactly so. So we have mm-hmm. There's a Nothing Wrong With You retreat offered in other venues. It's not that the retreat experience for
exactly.
beginners and for practitioners that are advanced are going away. Mm-hmm. It's just that that they're not happening at this physical location. Mm-hmm. What's happening at this physical location is a different way of training. And mm-hmm. it's not even, we can't even say it's an advanced training, right? But it does mm-hmm. require a commitment, a winnowing down, a real clarity of what is it that I'm training for.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the training yeah. there is, I'm coming here because I want to live and be part of a community that has this very specific focus, which is to wake up and end suffering, and everything mm-hmm. that I do, I'm doing from that perspective. You know, what
right.
dropped in, Jen, is that people who are practicing like that, who live at the monastery for an extended period of time, who follow the schedule, who part of whose day-to-day, it's a training to live, right? Because
yeah, right.
You're, it's not like we're doing something esoteric. We are still doing our laundry and washing
right.
the dishes and preparing our meals. But there's a simple
right.
spiritual life where everything,
yep.
the variables get removed, and then we get
yeah.
to focus on the I think it's the, you know, before enlightenment, we chop firewood and carry water. After enlightenment,
uh-huh.
we chop firewood and carry water. How do we do that?
Yeah.
Right? That's what we're training in. We're
yeah.
learning to see how that's the case. How that
yeah.
experience leads us to enlightenment. And there's a focused attention on that.
Right, right. And so physically being at the monastery is a practice opportunity, and it's one that absolutely remains available. And it's just, you know, it's a certain kind of experience, and it will be for, you know, people who are looking for that particular experience in their practice.
That's right. So it's still the Zen Monastery Peace Center, and as
mm-hmm.
you and I were joking about it, Jen, when you look at it one way, it's peace, and the other way, it's practice.
Right.
Right?
Because it truly
it
is both. Talk about training to live. If we were each, I mean, when we each live that way, when we live from the laundry is my practice, the dishes are my practice, how I interact with the people in my community is my practice, that is the definition of peace. I mean, that's why we say inner peace, world peace. That's it right there.
Yeah, and the other angle for me, peace is synonymous with harmony, right? And
mm-hmm.
we say compassionate comprehension. The word that the Buddha used was sama, peace, harmony, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm in
mm-hmm.
harmony with all that is. And that
right.
is what I'm practicing.
Truly.
And
yep.
and the thing also that dropped in is, you know, the way in which it's structured, this level of training is not, you know, it's how do we say it? We are offering this as a possibility to anyone who's interested in deepening their practice. Mm-hmm. And there are certain prerequisites that we're going to assist people in acquiring if they want to train at this level of practice, right? Because mm-hmm. it requires having seen egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. It requires having seen the resistance that it puts up in having mm-hmm. seen that it often makes practice the enemy and being able to work with that, because otherwise it's a miserable experience, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It's a kindness, absolutely, to the person who's interested in that to help get them prepared for it. Yeah, yes. To not just, yeah. Yeah.
And so we've been talking about what is the preparation if you want to do this kind of training? Mm-hmm. How do we have mini retreats, if you will, which are like 1 week retreats at the monastery that are held every year that are like mm-hmm. an onboarding or training process to assist people mm-hmm. who want to do this training to come and try it out and be given an orientation and have an experience of what it's like so that if they want to come back next year, they are prepared for what it is that they're going to experience, not in terms of, you never are, right? Whatever happens, that's the beauty of Zen. But in that you don't bench press your weight the first day you go into the gym. You go through a series of exercises that trains you to eventually bench press your weight.
Precisely. Yep. Yeah. So we're coming up against the hour, Ashwini. Do you feel like there were other points that you wanted to add in? I mean, the other thing I would say is that it's going to be an ongoing dialogue, of course, throughout the year. And I hope we'll have some folks on the Good News Update who are actually having the experience. And I think that will help fill it out for people also so that people can get a sense of, well, what does that mean, you know, to train in that way? So we'll make a commitment to have folks on to really speak about that. I wondered if there are any other logistics of it you wanted to...
Well, there was one thing that dropped in, of course, and it just went completely out of, completely out of my mind.
Scared it out.
You said that. Let me see if I can get it back, right, which is we train to take responsibility for our practice. And mm-hmm. here's the thing, right? Here it is, Jen. There's a beautiful thing that Sherry wrote, which was at the back of our guest booklet in uh-huh. terms of donations for the practice, right? Uh-huh. If people feel this is a valuable service, then they will support it. Yes. When it's no longer a valuable service and that nobody wants to support it, we'll stop.
That's right.
Right? And so it's the same thing. If there are people who want to take this practice opportunity and train in that way, and that there is Sangha that wants to support people training in that way, even if they don't train that way or can't for some reason or are preparing to train that way, then the place is available.
Yes. Yeah. And I'm so glad you made that point.
That shifts the energy of the place, which is it's not a retreat center that's supporting itself by offering retreats, but it's a practice center that is truly, and I don't mean this in the financial way at all, it's truly alive and supported and nurtured and created and maintained when there's participation.
Yep, I'm just so glad you put that, you ended with that point, because it's so essential. You know, the monastery doesn't exist because it should exist or because, you know, right or wrong or good or bad or because, you know, we really want it to exist, but it exists because, you know, there are people who want it, because there's a desire for it, because there's a large group of people who are, you know, invested in participating in that way in their lives. And that's why it exists. And as long as there is that, it will exist.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's really organically living place. And the living in it, the aliveness of it, is that is all the people who are there, who want it to be there, who take care of it, for whom it's there to be supportive as a place to practice, and it's there because they're there practicing there. It's that symbiotic thing that we're talking about.
Yeah, it is, and I'm so grateful for the discussion, Ashwini, because whenever we talk about it, I just fall in love with it again.
Yes. It's exciting, it's fun, it's just a different way to practice. And as a consequence, that's exciting.
It is. It really is. And it's a pleasure to get to participate in it. Yep. Well, thank you so much for being on with us.
And as I think you said, Jen, it's going to be a series of conversations because we talked about the structure and the philosophy of it, and the implementation of it has already started, right? The people who are there are creating that.
Yeah, exactly. It's already happening, and it's life is happening it, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
We set the intention, and then it just kind of leads us from there.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, great. Okay, well, thank you, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Sherry.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
How are you?
I'm really, really well.
Great.
Having a good life. How
Wonderful.
About you?
I'm having a good life, too. Very blessed one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Joyful.
Joyful. Yes, that's a timely description, isn't it?
Uh-huh. Focused a lot on joy.
Yes, and trees.
And trees and butterflies. Yeah, our friends the trees.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Yeah. You know what? The point that I would make from what Jen and Ashwini were talking about is that in this new incarnation, if you will, the monastery is very possibly, for the first time, actually a monastery.
Hmm.
Yeah.
For the first time, the monastery is actually a monastery.
Mm-hmm. Because it has been a monastery that was a retreat center.
Yes.
And now it's just a monastery, which is good.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Do you want to say more about that?
No, not really.
Okay.
It'll probably come up in the other discussions, but just that it's been a place where people lived and trained, and then there was this constant influx of people. You know, it was kind of, we kid about, you know, it's a hotel and a restaurant and a school.
Yes.
And so there's a lot of, we could say, spiritual opportunity in that. But it takes away from the simple focus on, I think it was Ashwini who said, the sort of practicing to live, practicing for life, just
yes.
Simply being there moment by moment, using everything in my experience to see how I cause myself to suffer and dropping that and ending suffering. There's no, there's very little then distraction from that.
Yes. Yes.
Which is very monastic in nature.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there aren't monks any longer. Which has always been the case, but it's kind of, we sort of lost this along the way somewhere. Everyone who's on the property is a monastic.
Yes.
As soon as you go through the gate, you're a monk.
Yes.
When you leave the gate, then that's up to you, but it's kind of irrelevant at that point.
Yes.
When you come in, you're a monk. When you leave, then you're doing whatever it is that you're doing.
Yes.
I mean, we hope that people will continue with a deep awareness, a conscious awareness of moment by moment activity. But that's what people are committing to while they're on the property.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, it's fun.
Great.
Yeah.
Great. I have a couple of announcements here.
All right.
The last at-home retreat of this season is December 6th. That's a Saturday. And you can continue to explore upping your game.
Uh-huh. It is not too late to up our game.
Never too late to up our game.
Never too late.
And this event is included in the year-long retreat. And anyone who's not signed up for the year-long retreat is welcome to join us for the day.
Mm-hmm.
And Guidance Day is Saturday, December 13th. Don't let the voices talk you out of one-on-one support for practice.
Mm-hmm.
And a couple of reminders. To make guest show, to indicate your desire to talk with Sherry, press star 6 and then 1. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. Oh, a lot of callers here. Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Jennifer from New York.
Well, hello, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks. Wow, I can't believe I'm first. I'm calling because my coach suggested it.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'll just tell you what she and I were talking about yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess is what inspired her to suggest it.
It must have been something in that conversation, huh?
Well, one thing is I've been kind of in and out of depressive states for some weeks now, like 1 week up and 1 week down. So I've been struggling with that. And I had this awareness that felt really kind of like a big deal that I was telling her about. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, the sound of the phone just like changed. Sorry. Super silent.
No, I'm listening intently.
Sometimes it's like a fuzzy sound, and sometimes it's like completely silent.
Mm-hmm.
What was I saying? This awareness I had one morning was, I guess I started to realize, I guess from a whole new angle or like extra deeply or something, that there's this part of me that's really buys into this this idea of self-worth being dependent on success and failure.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses all kind of, conditioning uses all kind of content. It especially uses career, which was the topic I went into coaching with. And it uses practice, and it uses how I am with people.
It uses, what was the last one, Jennifer?
Like how I am with people.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, may I ask you about that?
Sure.
Okay, so when you say that there's a part of you who really buys into that well-being or worth, self-worth is dependent upon success, are you indicating that that is what's speaking to you? Is there a voice with that that talks to you about success or about your worth?
You know, that's another thing I brought up with the coach yesterday, is that, like, I guess if you're like, the voices can be so subtle. I can't say, yeah, I hear these particular messages. And
uh-huh.
Yeah, I just had this, also a fear come up. I wonder if that just had to do, though, with, like, a big awareness kind of breaking through and then immediately followed by fear. But I had this fear, like, you know, it's just too deeply ingrained and I can't change it.
Uh-huh. That, and the fear came with that message?
The fear was about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That you, when that fear was there, you knew that that's what it meant.
Yeah, I was talking to her about it being just. It just seems so daunting to be able to love myself and accept myself unconditionally.
Uh-huh.
And I really want to, you know, I've been talking kind of, I talked to her about whatever is going on, but there's been this kind of a focus on career. And some months back was my first call with you, and I talked about career, lack of career. I don't know if you remember.
Mm-hmm. I do.
Well, yeah, so.
Okay.
I was thinking I want to shift my goal to learning to, or practicing unconditional love.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. You knew I was going to go there, huh? We're all on the same jag around here. Because so first of all, I'm going to go with the I actually don't think that that is a part of you that buys into that. I think that that's, you know what I think it is, egocentric karmic
that,
conditioning self-hate.
The part that,
pardon
sorry,
me?
Can you clarify?
Pardon me?
That which part is not part of me?
The buying into that your worth is dependent upon success. That's a kind of a standard approach that ego maintenance system takes. You know, you'll be okay when. You know, you'll be okay when you're successful, when you have money, when you have the right relationship, when you're married,
yeah.
when you have kids, when you retire, okay, it's always something.
But there's someone
out
who buys it, right? I mean, if the story is there, doesn't that mean there's a subpersonality buying it?
No. I think that
no.
What usually happens in a case like that is that the same system is talking to itself. So it's kind of like a little
right.
tennis match with ego. So ego says, you're not worth, I mean, it doesn't really say it like this, obviously, but it's what it means. You're not worth anything because you're not successful. And it lobs that over the net, and then ego on the other side says, well, that's really depressing because there's nothing that I can do about it, lobs it back over. Well, if you were, okay, and it just goes back and forth like that. And when you pay really close attention, you'll get to see that you're actually watching that. You're hearing it. You know, you're the observer of that whole thing going on. Now, of course, you know, we're meant to believe that it's us. You know, it's in my head, so it must be me. But I'm going to suggest that it's actually not, and that it's not overwhelming or impossible or whatever. That it really is, and I say this really fast, and you know, and it sounds like I'm saying it's really simple, and I actually am, that all that's required of us is that we don't give attention to it. So if somebody's talking and you're not giving them any attention at all, you actually don't know what they're saying, and what they're saying doesn't really affect you, because you're not attending to it. And so what you've decided to do is the really perfect solution, which is you're going to turn attention to unconditionally loving, accepting, and feeling compassion for the human being who has been held hostage by that story.
Yeah. I guess I want to say, like, I guess I've been falling for the story that it's a subpersonality, and I need to, like.
Yes, we do. And it desperately wants everybody to believe that it's a legitimate part of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because if it is, and especially if it's somebody young, you know, it's a child. And usually it's not. Sometimes there's a young person who is being used in that way. But with a subject like success, it would be unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
Because success is an adult concept.
Huh.
So,
yeah, and that's maybe how it like lures the.
Say it again.
Maybe that's kind of like how it lures me too, like because people are going to be concerned about like a young one being like
yes
taken advantage of.
Exactly. Oh, the poor little thing. So if ego masquerades as an innocent child, you know, we don't want to be mean to an innocent child. So we're going to try to take care of it and try to help it and try to make it feel better. But what we notice is it never does. It never works. No matter how much I try to understand or support or encourage or reassure, this in quotes, little child never changes. And that's when we really get some solid evidence that it's not a little child. It's ego. And ego doesn't want to change, doesn't want to be reassured, doesn't want to be embraced, doesn't want anything. Just wants that attention.
I guess this would kind of explain why I try to do things like recording and listen and trying to I'm working on my relationship with that practice. But I guess I kind of feel like I have a lot of experiences where, well, where it's not successful. And, yeah.
Okay. Well, there are two completely separate issues here. Are you lovable? Are you successful? Okay, they don't have anything to do with each other. So here's my encouragement. Sit down with your recorder and record what any and everybody that you can think of who has ever cared about you has said to you that let you know they care about you.
I like that idea.
Okay, and you say it all into the recorder. You're smart. You're fun. You're cute. You're sweet. You're a good. You know you wash a mean dish. You're a great cook. Okay, whatever it is, just make an endless list, and then listen to it.
I like that idea a lot. Thanks.
Yeah.
I feel like it's been an ongoing struggle for me to come up with this folder on my recorder. That's my support and encouragement folder.
Yeah.
But that.
Yeah. And what you're going to get to, Jennifer, is that she is really a fine, fine human being. Lovable. Good, somebody you like, somebody that you enjoy, somebody you want to spend time with. And the more you realize that, the more you're going to have to say about her and the more she's going to get to hear. And as she hears that, she begins to sense how much she's loved and cared for, and that's going to change her. And from that place, you, she, can do or be anything you want. Okay? So that's where the work is. And my encouragement is drop success from your vocabulary. Give it no attention whatsoever. Okay? It's an irrelevant subject. Yeah? You're working on love. All right.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Keep in touch.
I will.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. You're listening to Open Air. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Dan from California.
Hey, Dan. What's going on?
This is my second time, and when we first spoke,
You asked me to check back in about working on some karmic stuff. You suggested moving when energy gets flowing, just to move the body.
Mm-hmm. Was that a good idea?
Well, it worked for me.
Oh,
one of the things that happens when I'm shaking my arms and legs is I just feel fun and silly, and it's kind of hard to stay in the content when you're doing the hokey pokey.
Yes. And egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, takes itself very seriously and wants us to do the same.
Yeah, it's funny how you can go from, you know, survival, life or death content to I'm just shaking my arms in the hallway, and all of a sudden, I mean, I just felt emotion right now. I forget what I'm seeing because I'm so focused on, with my eyes, I'm so focused on what's going on inside the head, and then as soon as I move, all of a sudden I'm aware of my surroundings. There's a wall. I'm in a hallway. It's like dropping back into now, I guess.
Yes, yeah. One of the things, I don't know if we've talked about it, but, you know, as a Sangha we talk about regularly. So this email class that we're doing has to do with nature and joy. And the connection there is that what happens when egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate, has somebody in its grips is that all the senses are closed down. As you say, the eyes are turned back inside conditioned mind. All that's being heard is the voices, the messages. It just completely cut off from the natural world. And there's a good reason for that, because just as you say, you know, you start shaking your arms and legs, and suddenly you're aware of where you are. If you look up, look outside, you see a tree, you see the sky, you see clouds. That system can't maintain its grip in the same way. So when people are lost in conditioning, they'll walk along just looking at the ground. You know, never looking anywhere else, because if they look up, they're going to get, in quotes, distracted from that obsessive focus on what's wrong. And ego doesn't want that to happen.
Yeah, focus on what's wrong. Which is what I called about.
Very good, very good.
There was some particularly strong content, and I was, you know, I've been in and out of content and kind of just watching and recording about. You know, here was something that I was being told I cannot be happy with unless something's different. Mm-hmm. And yet here I am happy with it. And I'm in this place where it's just nothing's wrong. So record there. And then I'm back into a place where the very same thing is very wrong. But now I have the recording. I have evidence that it wasn't wrong, and evidence I trust. I mean, I had the experience that it was okay.
Yeah. God, that's so powerful, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm kind of getting overwhelmed with gratitude here. Because, you know, I guess as a kid it was a trusted advisor, but now it just lies, which... It's tricky until you see it a few times. Because, yeah, I mean, it says you're always going to be unhappy because of X. And then, you know, I don't know, 3 hours later, I'm just kind of, like you said, looking at a tree or the sunset, and I'm fine.
Yes.
Oh, so I'm not unhappy for the rest of my life. Well, yeah, but no, that was clearly a lie.
Yes. And before recording and listening, we had no way to fight that. Because what you're describing is, I don't know, I think it's just one of the most astounding characteristics of being a human being, is that we move between those worlds so completely.
Mm-hmm.
So when we step into that dark room and you are not happy because of X, and you're never going to be happy because of X, that's your only reality. That's all there is. And there's no ability to remember that 3 hours ago I was fine. That's just not in that world at all. So we had no choice but to just be plunged into that hole, and then suddenly we pop out and we're okay, and then we plunge into the hole, have no idea how that plunge happens or how to get out of there. And now we have a mechanism for both of those, all three of those. We know how we get there. We know how to get out. And we know what to do when we get out. It's pretty miraculous.
Yeah. Listening for a while, doing the email classes, catching myself more and more quickly when I'm trying to solve content, and actually turned it around, because I was actually just before calling in, or before the show started, with this particular ex, having recently had this experience and having the recording, I was like, okay, so what, the next question that pops up is, well, what's really going on then? And just looking at the story and seeing, this, that, and the other thing, and, someone's getting hooked by this, and what does that person really need? And while this has been a story that's been believable for like 10 years, all of a sudden I just saw it's, in the end, whatever X or Y or Z is, a little person's being told he's wrong for things being this way.
Yes.
And it was kind of nice just to see that that's the root of it. It's not actually what's going on. It's just someone's being told they're wrong.
Yeah. And we have a whole way of talking about this, right? And who knows whether that's accurate or what. It makes perfect sense. It explains the circumstances. So that system in that runs on that negative energy will just keep reinforcing that story for as long as somebody's going to believe it, because it's generating that negative energy. And when we see that it was never, whatever this is, this content, that was never the issue. The issue was this going back to a place of feeling bad and cranking that wheel of feeling bad, feeling sad, feeling guilty, blaming, whatever it is. But all that negative energy being reinforced, that's what's actually going on. That's what all that content has in common. And when we realize that, we realize that it's unnecessary. It gives us nothing. And then we move into I don't want to do that.
Yeah, really seeing that it gets you nothing. I'm just dropping things that are popping in my head now, but I remember one of the shows talking about seeing all this suffering really as a process of dissatisfaction. It's not just looking at it as a process, like, okay, I'm suffering. What's actually going on? And I guess that spirit of inquisitiveness turns the tables.
Yes, it does. When it occurs to you to be aware of what's happening and to ask what's going on, you're disidentified. Yeah. Now you're not a part of that little tableau any longer. You're in the audience. You're now observing it. And of course, it's a master at pulling people out of the audience back into the play, right? But if we can stay back and keep watching it, it can't sustain itself. It needs all of our attention involved in the play in order to pull it off.
Right. You begin to see the smallest, I think someone used the last week, there was an analogy of, you begin to see there's maybe something behind the curtain and the whole thing comes crumbling down.
Yes.
So let me, I'm kind of using up all my time here, but let me leave with one more plug for R&L. Having a few safety recordings, like just your favorite song with some kind words on it, and just being able to hit that when you're in the middle of some ego fugue is amazing. So thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you. I feel like I just beat on people's heads about this stuff. And so it really, I can't tell you how heartening it is for me when people start saying their experience of what's happening with recording and listening, because that's That's what makes all the difference. You know, when you realize that you're suffering and you know how to stop it, that's just everything. Then, of course, the place that leaves us, and it's the next big hurdle in practice, then we have to get used to being happy.
Right? I just felt resistance to that.
Exactly. Yeah, you can work on ending suffering, but live in happiness? Whoa. Yeah, so we got another always there's another hill to climb.
Thankfully.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Thank you so
much.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Danny. That was great, Sherry, learning to live in happiness.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, truly, once we get to that point and we, because it's such an assumption, you know, everybody wants to be happy. Everybody wants to live in well-being and satisfaction, don't we? I mean, isn't that why we're doing all this stuff? And then to realize that is hitting a level of resistance that we just couldn't have believed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Great. We're going to break here and hear from our sponsor, and then we'll be back.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What if you lived with your soul as your pilot? What skies would you fly? How wide would you open? What would you sing if you gave voice to your beautiful heart?
This great song by Trish Bruxford Culligan invites us to give voice to our hearts. Simply Celebrate offers you a variety of ways to express your heart. And one of those is by celebrating the people you love. Our one-of-a-kind customized celebration books are like magic mirrors that reflect all of the laughter, adventures, and delight that friends and family share. Clients tell us that this is the best gift ever. Give voice to your heart and give a gift of love that lasts a lifetime. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
Welcome back to Open Air, and we have another caller here, Sherry.
Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Andrea calling from North Carolina.
Andrea from North Carolina, formerly of Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Lovely move, huh?
Yeah, it's actually very nice. I'm living in the Research Triangle Park.
Yeah. I know it well, actually.
Oh, yeah. It's
beautiful, isn't it?
It is. I still have to go to Asheville. I haven't gone there yet, but...
Oh, well, you may never go back. You may never return to the Triangle after Asheville.
I know. That's what I've heard.
Well, what's going on?
Well, I'm calling about... I'm just glad to connect, but I guess what's going on, what I'm kind of dealing with conditioning is I'm a recent medical condition that I may need to take medication for, and there's been a lot of suffering over that, and the suffering's been along the lines of, you know, I shouldn't have this condition, I do everything right. You know, I work out, I eat well, and, you know, I shouldn't have this. And, you know, so there's that, and there's, you know, a lot of suffering over that. And it's been going on for over a month now, and I'm seeing my doctor in a week. And it depends on, it's basically hypertension, and it depends on my blood pressure. Mm-hmm. And I'm required to take it once a day. And what I am normally has really helped is to not focus on it, to focus my attention on something else. And but it's hard to do because I have to take it every day. And so I've been struggling with that. And really the only thing that seems to work is to focus my attention on something else.
Now, let me catch up with you. So are you saying that having to take the medication every day kicks off the story?
No. So I haven't been prescribed medication yet, but at this point, I'm having to take my blood pressure every day.
Oh, got it.
And
if
it's too high, then I'm going to have to take medication, at least according to conventional Western medicine.
Uh-huh. And the way you said that makes me think you're going to look into unconventional alternatives.
Well, that's the thing, is I feel like I've done all the alternatives my whole life. Like, I eat really well, I exercise, I meditate, and so there's this voice saying, why is this happening to me?
Well, actually, I was thinking, that's an interesting topic right there, right? Because, in other words, if I'm aware, nothing bad will ever happen to me. And so we would then have to conclude that everybody who has a physical condition must be doing something wrong.
Exactly.
Which we would agree is probably not the case.
No.
But I was actually thinking about not just that, but things like acupuncture and other systems of treating physical conditions.
Yeah, I guess I'm not aware of it. This is all very new to me, so I haven't really researched anything. It just all of a sudden came on because I was told I went to an appointment and out of the blue was told that I had, you know, a really high blood pressure, and it was a shocker to me. And I thought it was a fluke, and then I was taking it more regularly and realizing, unfortunately, it's not. And this is all very new. I guess I'm still in a state of shock.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I would encourage, I think I just did a blog on this recently, but I'm not certain. I can never remember. You know, it just truly, I say it all runs together, and truly it does for me. But the idea that something like this happens and we kind of need to panic and get urgent and turn it over to the voices of conditioning, who will gleefully take us down as many roads into suffering as possible, which
right.
It sounds like you've already noticed.
Yes.
That taking your blood pressure becomes an opportunity for torture.
Yes.
And to realize that probably it's not life-threatening right now, and that you do have the time to research and be with yourself and get really clear about what's so, and find out just everything that you can about you and the condition and how you want to be with this, the choices that you want to make with this.
I totally agree with you. The other thing I'm noticing is that I really liked the peace quote a few days ago about how resistance is resisting that you're, I can't remember how it goes exactly, but it's something about your identity being questioned and your beliefs about your identity. And my identity's always been, you know, I have good blood pressure. I don't have heart disease or diabetes or any of those things. You know, I'm a very healthy person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's hurting me. One of the worst is, oh my God, I've never looked at myself as someone with one of these, you know, serious chronic health conditions.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And identity, ego identity, wants to make that the focus of everything, right? Instead of, so I was just talking with somebody earlier who it's kind of in a very similar place, just going along, and then all of a sudden, whoops, there's something really off in my body here.
Yeah.
And attempting, working hard to stay in a place of, this is really interesting. You know, this is really interesting. Not only is it interesting how I'm reacting to this, but the condition itself is really interesting. So what is it? What's going on? Rather than, okay, there's something wrong. I need to change it. I need to get rid of it. So I have high blood pressure. I need to have low blood pressure. And I need to do whatever anybody tells me to do in order to achieve that, which is such a, you know, a conditioned reaction that we have. And yet, every experience that we have in life is an opportunity to, well, as we were talking about earlier, you know, see how suffering is caused so that we can move through that, so that we can drop it and not have to go to those places. Because, as we know, someday something's going to happen that isn't reversible. And that's what we really, that's the attitude of mind that we're cultivating now when things, where you know, we have a little more space around them, so that when that time comes, we have on our side unconditional love, compassion, presence, ability to step back and be with ourselves in a way that is kind and loving and supportive.
And that's kind of what I've been struggling with, is that I specifically do the reading in the early morning so that I can kind of not think about it the rest of the day and not have it looming over me.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems like a good strategy, like a compassionate strategy for myself. What I'm having difficulty with is I want to make a reassurance for myself, and I can't see, it's like I ask my question, what do I want to hear? And it's, I can't come up with anything. It just doesn't seem like anything's reassuring, and that's where I'm having the problem.
Okay, well, if it were somebody else, if it were a loved one, what would you say?
I think, and I even asked myself that question.
Good.
I think I would just say, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh. Okay. And would you maybe add something like, I'm going to be with you, whatever you need?
Yeah, yeah.
Let me know what I can do. I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to leave you. I'm going to help in any way I can.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds helpful. I feel like I also need a coaching tape, you know, like to remind me to focus on something else too.
Yes. Well, it's kind of like this. You know, we have a condition like this. You know, you go and then all of a sudden this happens. And we forget that, favorite image, we can get run over by a truck tomorrow.
Right.
Right. So there's nothing to say that this is going to have anything to do with what happens to you in the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
But it's presented that way, right? And
yeah.
So a tape, aren't we old-fashioned, a recording that says how you want your life to be every day of your life, every moment of your life, whatever the circumstances of your life.
Yeah, that's a really good, yeah.
What do you want to focus on? What's important to you? How do you want to be? How do you want to be with you, with your family, with your friends, with coworkers, with what you're doing in the world for your work? How do you want to be? What do you, as the old Landmark Forum, you know, what do you want to stand for? What do you want your life to stand for?
Mm-hmm.
And just to remind yourself of that.
Yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, the morning recordings, they're very good and helpful.
Yeah, I think I have all these old recordings that I did years ago, which I still listen to. But I think I really need some new ones.
Yep. It's a new day, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so you wake up in the morning and you start listening to who you are and what's important to you, what you value, what you choose for your life, how you want to be for yourself, for your loved ones. That whole, you know, we get a whole picture of your life. And there you are. That's how you're going to go into your day.
Oh, I really like that. That sounds really helpful.
Good. Well, you do that, and then you let me know, okay?
okay.
We can just then stay with it and take it to the next step and the next step and the next step and the next step.
Well, you know, I will, and I'm so glad that I finally called in.
Me too. It's been years at this point, I think.
I know. You know, I just, conditioning, just, it was like, it's too hard, there's this new platform, and it's actually really easy.
The only thing that's ever hard is conditioning, right?
Yes.
All right. Well, it's great to hear your voice. I'm glad you called.
I'm grateful. Thank you, Sherry.
Oh, you're welcome. Good night.
Night.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. You're listening to Open Air, and I think we have time for one more caller, Sherry.
Good.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jody from Atlanta, currently in New Orleans.
Wow, that's nice. Is it nice?
Yeah.
You like it?
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
A wonderful
here.
Place on the planet, isn't it?
It really is.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, what's going on in New Orleans? No, I mean, what's going on with you?
Well, actually a lot of things. It's funny because a lot that I was thinking about really relates to what the last caller was talking about. I think last time I called in, I was sharing how my sister had just been diagnosed with breast cancer and was just starting the chemo process. And so there's a lot of content there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I have had a tremendous amount of gratitude for practice through the situation,
mm-hmm.
Because I've been able to be there with her.
Mm-hmm.
And I am her chemo buddy, basically. And so being able to be present, so it's as fun as chemo can be. And it's...
May I?
Sure.
I just want to underline what you're saying, because the phrasing is so important, that you're able to be there with her,
mm-hmm.
right? That it's not about you.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to check out and go into conditioning and listen to stories about how awful this is and how hard it is for you. You can actually be present with her as she's having the experience she's having.
Mm-hmm.
It's extraordinary.
It is. And at times I almost feel like when I'm talking to people about it, and I almost have this very positive outlook, not positive that I know what the outcome is going to be, but just, you know, this is what's happening, and so this is what we're dealing with, and I'm not really sad about it per se. I almost feel guilty, like I need to say, oh, but she's really, like, it's really bad, and instead of just saying, you know, her spirit has been unbelievable through this, and our relationship has strengthened in a way that I could never have anticipated. And I'm able to be there for her in a way that other people in my family aren't. And for the exact reason you just said, because when I'm there with her, it's really about her and about us and about being together. And and I attribute so much of that to the awareness practice. And so the last couple of weeks, I've just had such gratitude when I've been listening to the calls for this. And I guess the other thing that's come up is this situation has raised some issues about my own health, and I have some genetic inclination towards cancer that I found out about because of all this. And to the point of the last caller, it's like, well, this isn't fair. I'm taking care of myself now, and so much of it is based on risks and potentials that I have to make decisions based on percentages, not based on knowledge of anything current. And so I appreciate what you just said to the last caller about really being with myself through this and what is it that I want, because nobody can tell me what's going to happen.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
And every once in a while I don't freak out about it. I just sort of I'm very aware that that is in the back of my mind. Mm-hmm. I'm very aware that this is forcing me to make some decisions about family and do I want one? And, you know, things that I hadn't really been forced to consider
right.
immediately.
Right. Yeah. Because now you know that if you have children, the chances are good that this will go right on.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, that and some of the recommended courses of action they suggest would make it that having children would not be possible.
Yeah.
So there's kind of that question too.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, because I always look at these things and then it goes universal, because we're always in that position. We just don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when nothing like this has happened to us, like what you're going through or what Andrea is going through, or a lot of other people are going through, of course, because when we hear about something like this happens to you, then you start hearing about it everywhere, right? Or you think, well, my God, everybody on the planet's in this kind of situation with themselves or with somebody they love. It's just we see it everywhere. But until that happens to us and it's right there in front of us, we don't realize that every mm-hmm. decision we make needs to be a decision that we're going to be able to live with.
Mm-hmm.
And that the way to be able to live with the choices that we make is by ceasing to entertain voices of mistake, wrong, regret, guilt, blame.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Because as long as we are willing to go along with any of those processes, we are bound to suffer. The
mm-hmm.
suffering is unavoidable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's at times really hard to just say that whatever decision I make will be the right decision because that's the decision I make.
Yes, and Jody, I would take right out of it.
Hmm.
It's the best decision you can make for where you are and what you know.
Hmm.
And that's where we are all the time. You know, if we could look 20 years down the road, we probably at any point in anybody's life, they would make some different choices,
mm-hmm.
right? But that's not available to us. The damnable part is we do make a choice. We do make a decision based on the best information that we have, which could involve terror and all sorts of other motivations, right? But it's
mm-hmm.
still the best we can do in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when more information is revealed, of course, the voices want to kick in with, well, you should have known better, and if you hadn't done that, and now look at what you've done. And we're talked into forgetting that I didn't have all this information then.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's really, to me, that's where, you know, that's where the work has to be, because I don't know, it sounds like your sister's doing great and hopefully will never get into any of those kinds of places, but a lot
mm-hmm.
of people go there. You know, if only I should have, or why didn't I, or God, I can't believe I, you know, that sort of thing, and their lives turn into hell. And
there's
nothing going on other than the torture of those self-hating voices.
Oh, yeah, and just fear. I mean, I think there's so much fear around cancer and around, for good reason in some senses, but it's, like you said, you can walk out the door and get hit by a car. I mean, things happen in life, and, it's really, to see the gifts in this diagnosis have been, I think, really powerful for her and for me as well.
Yeah, because, again, it's so easy for us on the, you know, with all of that going on, it's so easy for people to get lulled into, we have forever.
Right.
I don't have to pay attention to today. I don't have to worry about this relationship. I don't have to take care of myself. I don't, you know.
Right.
Hey, I'm going to live forever. It's all going to be like this forever. Now, when we say it out loud, we go, no, of course we don't believe that. But we live as if we do.
Mm-hmm.
And then something like this happens and we realize, wow, we just don't know.
Right.
We got to love as much as we can every minute of every day, because soon we won't have that opportunity.
Yeah. And just a quick plug, I started doing the Zen coaching,
mm-hmm.
and it's been really, really helpful. Like, I don't know what I expected, but it's, I've had a very weak recording and listening practice, and I'm still, I wouldn't say that it's a strong practice, but
you're not
I'm understanding,
yet.
I'm not a pro,
okay.
at how to do it, like how I would, like how to operationalize it in my life, and one of the things that I've done is done a morning recording that talks about exactly what you just recommended to the previous caller in terms of what it is that I want my life, like I really want to live from a place of serenity, joy, and peace, and so what does that look like for me to say that in the morning and have a recording that it's there? And so I'm only on day one or two on that, but it's,
yeah.
I did some recordings before, and it's just been really, I'm trusting the process, and having a coach is really helpful because my head, my conditioning kind of doesn't yeah. love the recording and listening idea. So.
Oh, no kidding. You know,
yeah.
So those voices have had access, full access, 24/7, to people to torture
mm-hmm.
and brutalize and, as they wish. And now the competition has come in, and the competition is taking hold. And
mm-hmm.
boy, does it not like it. The reign of terror. I swear to God. Self-hate can see that reign of terror coming to an end, and it's just in a panic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Because yeah. what the alternative, I mean, the two choices are so clear. You know, I can live in this how I want my life to be, and reminders of love and caring and joy and opportunities, or I could listen to that misery-making machine. I know which one I'm going with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I'm glad. I'm really glad. I have a feeling probably your coach is listening in, so your coach is glad too. And
it's been great.
Yeah, that's great to hear, and a great encouragement for other people to, you know, we just got to get all the support we can get. That's all there is
mm-hmm.
to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you New Year's.
I was just going to say, if I don't talk to you before, which I hope I do, see you at the retreat at New Year's.
Yeah, I can't wait.
All right. Thanks, Jody.
Thank you. Take care. Night.
Thanks for joining us, Jody. Well, I'm feeling a very blessed human being tonight, Sherry.
Me too. There's just nothing like song and practice, is there?
No, it's wonderful. It's mm-hmm. wonderful.
Yep. All right. Until next week, then?
Until next week, then. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.